I'm not a lunatic, Diven, and I don't want Vicar Jaspard pissed off at me any more than the next man. Jarrus's voice and expression alike were grimmer than they had been. At the same time, I'm not going to lead our navy into a sausage grinder when I know damned well what's going to happen to it.
I don't think you should. I just said this better not come at the temple cold. I think we should send them a report on the current situation. We need to formally acknowledge our receipt of their instructions anyway. So we tell them we're storing the ships, rounding up as many of the men we still need as we can lay hands on, and generally preparing to sortie, as soon as practicable, when they order us to. But we also tell them we've got somewhere around 2/3 of the entire damned Imperial Carizian Navy offshore. Then, if they send us the execute order, and if the weather's still against us, and the Carizians haven't reduced their strength, we send them another message that says that in light of the Carizian numbers, which we had previously reported, coupled with unfavorable wind conditions, we believe the sortie isn't practicable without our suffering losses severe enough to prevent us from carrying out our end of the mission.
It was Jarrus's turn to frown thoughtfully. It was always possible, even probable, the message Coleman was proposing to send would pass the actual execution order in transit. It might not, too, given how long it would take the northern force of galleons to approach the Gulf of Matthias. In either case, though, preparing the ground ahead of time offered obvious advantages. "And the truth is," he reflected, "with this damned many Carizians mucking around in the Gulf of Matthias, we've already drawn off a huge chunk of their available strength. As Diven says, this has to be 2/3 of their total galleon strength. If Harper and Shao can't break through Caleb's remaining 30 or so ships with over 100 of their own, we're all totally and completely screwed anyway." "I'd say you're on the right track," he said out loud. "The one thing I think we should add, though, is to point out how large a percentage of the Carizian strength we've drawn into our own waters. It might not hurt to plant a seed or two of our own by suggesting that what we have here is the opportunity to trap the Carizians between the anvil of our coast and Harper and Shao's hammer."
"Now that, Irwin, strikes me as a very good notion," Coleman said approvingly. "In that case, it would make perfect sense for us to sit tight, continuing to keep them drawn into our waters until Harper and Shao can hit them from the other side, wouldn't it? They may actually go ahead and change our orders to do exactly that, in light of the Carizians' change in deployment."
"I certainly won't object if they do," Jarrus agreed. "And not just because it's a lot less likely to get my crews slaughtered," he added silently. "Because the fact is, you're right, that would be the most effective blow we could strike out of this whole over-elaborate operation of Magwares."
"All right, Master Lathic," Sir Duncan Yearly told Destiny's first lieutenant as the sun settled into a glowing bed of red and purple embers on the western horizon.
"I think it's time to stand a bit farther offshore before we snug everyone down for the night. We'll bring the column to a north by northwest heading, if you please."
"Aye, aye, sir," Robert Lathic replied, and gestured to the signal's midshipman to pass the order to the other ships.
Yearly left him to it, walking aft to stand at the taffrail, watching the galleons astern of Destiny, while Lathic's orders sent the signal flags soaring up the halyards. He hoped the other ships were already prepared for the course change, which had been due about now under his standing orders. Sail drill was actually what most worried him about his entire mission, since it was what seemed most likely to alert the enemy to the truth. Those other galleons simply didn't have the sort of manpower Destiny did, which was going to make it more difficult for them to carry out sailing evolutions with the sort of snap, precision, and speed that were hallmarks of a Carizian man of war. Not too surprisingly, Yearly supposed, since Destiny and her sister Mountain Root were the only two real men of war in that entire long column.
We must have used up every can of black, white, and red paint in the entire city of Telesburg, he thought now, shaking his head as he watched evening settle in. Who would have thought we could disguise an entire fleet of merchantmen just by slapping paint on their sides? Now all I have to do is make sure no one from Desnare gets close enough to smell the fresh turpentine.